Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this October the 22nd on the west coast of the United States, October the 23rd in the eastern and central time zones, again, of the United States. And this is the year 2009. A.D., in the year of our Lord. Also like to welcome all the folks listening to us on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, especially a hearty welcome to all of those in the U.S. military who are listening to the show, either live or on a staggered broadcast throughout the day or night, depending on where you live on this wonderful planet that's really going through some changes. Also like to welcome any listeners on Blog Talk Radio. And I suppose I should give a shout out to some dear friends who have been listening to the show since its beginning, and their numbers are growing. I failed to mention everyone. I know this group by their first names, pretty much have them memorized. So I'm going to go through the list off the top of my head. We've got Karen, Bob, and Bill, David, Sheila, Zachariah, Crenshaw, Sylvia, Jill, and I suppose I should throw in the general. And there are a few other names that I don't have right here before me. I apologize if I haven't mentioned you, but you folks know who you are, and I appreciate your support of this radio show. Lots of things going on in the world. As I mentioned on last night's show, at the outset of the show, and I've actually mentioned this a couple of times this week, we have an article that came out. If you Google the words Honolulu advertiser, Obama Duckworth 2006, you get an article that was written on the 8th of January 2006, describing how Obama, the usurper, long-legged Mac Daddy in chief, sitting in the administration of the U.S. corporation, is declared to have been born in Indonesia. I find that very refreshing. I wish I had had this article before I did all my research. In one sentence, basically, it covered everything that it took me a year and a half to deduce by turning over rocks and brushing aside the snakes that crawl underneath the rocks, going down the rabbit hole with a roto-rooter, and to find out the rabbits had long left. And I found lie after lie after lie. And they tried to cover up this article in the Honolulu Advertiser. A week later, they made a retraction, called it a correction, but failed to really address the issue. They left it out totally. So to make a long story short, we've got now some evidence that there were some things published in newspapers. And what's interesting is the Honolulu Advertiser, ironically, is the paper which allegedly, and I'm going to say allegedly, published the initial birth announcement of Barack Obama being born to Barack Obama Sr. and Stanley Ann Dunham, who I've proven are just figments of this whole Wizard of Oz story from Kansas, and they are not the parents of Barack Obama. If you could put that up on a teleprompter, you could probably get him to admit it. But that's the only way he'll say it, is if it's there for him to read to you. such is the nature of mind control and severe programming. But this story obviously will manifest into something much larger. It's grown legs and it's probably going to grow wings. I find it interesting that that someone was able to dig this up. Of course, we've got admissions by the Communist Party in Chicago that Obama was one of the party members when they congratulated him for being voted into the state Senate in Illinois, and then subsequently to the U.S. Senate. These things are planned. The information is out there. They assume that we're too dumb to understand what we're seeing, or they're maybe underestimating our resolve to do something about it. And I do know that there are some white hats out there in the intelligence agencies that do listen to the show and others like this that are probably rejoicing in the amount of truth that's coming out on a nightly basis. And we want to congratulate those men and women for the work they're doing and for honoring their oath to the Constitution. Too bad for those in the black ops groups, because in the end, they will lose out. With that, I would like to end my little commentary and bring on tonight's guest. He has a very popular website. The intelligence agencies know that, too. He's in the, I think he's inside the top 50,000 now for sure, worldwide. The website is called educate-yourself.org. And he's a researcher, a metaphysical scientist, even a musician and a music composer, and his name is Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Don. Very happy to be on with you again.
Well, when you heard this news, you may have even heard it before I did. You're usually on top of all these articles, and I might be tied up in something. Of course, we sort of let each other know when we hear about something.
Mm-hmm.
What was your reaction to this little bit of information?
Well, it was delightful to see it. I did find it, I believe, off Jeff Rentz's website, and I was amazed. I says, holy macro. This lady, this woman, apparently, I think she was in Iraq, an army veteran of the Iraq War, I believe, and she was running for some minor political position in Hawaii in 2006, and the police, the whole piece was essentially a puff piece about her, you know,
mm-hmm.
And in the course of the piece, she mentions that she's very grateful for Barack's support and that they have something in common. They were both, you know, she was born in Thailand, if I recall, and she said he's born in Indonesia. So kind of she's patting herself on the back, kind of immigrants make good in the U.S. type of,
mm-hmm.
you know, notion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and apparently...
But they had to make a correction out of her quote.
Exactly, right, exactly. So somebody who's you know, keeping track of Barack's tracks in order to prevent these sort of things from being discovered by the public, obviously caught it and says, holy macro, you know, she not being in the loop, knowing that, you know, Barack was already pre-planned to become president, you know, in the 2008 election. She not knowing that, of course, not privy to that, just blurted this out because it's what, you know, she found out at the time. So she's just making casual conversation. And yeah, somebody who's vacuuming up after Barack is just discovered it. And then they go into, you know, let's fix it mode. And this is extremely common. You had mentioned that this same, newspaper allegedly had the announcement of Barack's birth there in supposedly Hawaii. And it's not news to anybody who's, you know, is not a, you know, is not a child, that they routinely go back and change archives of newspapers, whatever it takes to make the to fudge the record, to make it look good.
Mm-hmm.
In this regard, I might just draw your attention to something which Ted Gunderson discovered. This has to do with the Jeffrey McDonald, Franklin cover-up case. This was back, he found this around 2000, 2001, somewhere around there. But it had to do with a British production company that filmed John DeCamp and other principals who were involved in the story that was portrayed in the book, The Franklin Cover-Up. And I think it was York Television was the name of the production company. And they followed him around for about a year or so, and it was a terrific documentary that they did. And the name of the documentary was The Conspiracy of Silence. And I think 93 was the year, 92, 93, that the documentary was supposed to be aired. And in fact, it was the announcement of the screening of this show on the Discovery Channel was put in Reader's Digest. You know, as you know, they print the digest, you know, some weeks in advance of the actual time slot, and then they get a, you know, they need time to distribute and get it on the newsstands the week before, etc. So, and Ted and others, you know, I don't know if Ted himself saw it originally, but he was told by others that the airing was listed in Reader's Digest. What happened is that as it was printed in Reader's Digest, some people in Congress who were undoubtedly involved in the cover-up, because it had to do with a pedophile ring that was operating between Omaha and very high-level Washington officials, found out about the airing of it, and, oh, they couldn't have that come out. So what they did is that a bunch of them contacted this production company, paid them an obscene amount of money to buy up all the rights to it and to have all the copies of the tapes delivered to them. And that was supposedly what happened. However, somebody in some editing, video production editing company, made a copy of the in-house tape. In other words, it wasn't a finished tape. It didn't have the titles on it. It was, you know, it was in rough production form, but it had the footage that was going to be included in the airing had the show ever been broadcast. And a copy of that was sent surreptitiously to John DeCamp. And John had it, and I think it was around 98, 99, somewhere around there, he gave a copy to Ted and said, here, you know, make this available. People really need to see this. This is the video that was never aired, but it was pulled. Okay, so around that time, I was putting up articles about the Franklin cover-up. Ted was doing a lot of radio interviews, John DeCamp, et cetera. There's a lot of stuff going on. And somewhere along the line, it might have been this UK company or maybe, I forget who, I just can't remember. I know the police chief involved in Omaha that was in the book, involved in the case, he has a son who's an attorney, who tried to make all kinds of moves to shut down any mention of his father's involvement in this, which was heavy. Trust me on that. And, you know, he's just trying to shut down any publicity. Well, anyway, what emerged at the time was there was this disinformation campaign that says that, you know, these people who are saying that this was supposed to be aired and it was yanked, it's malarkey, you know. It was never scheduled. And then what they do is they produced a Reader's Digest, and they said, see, here's the date, here's the time, Discovery Channel, and something else was listed in that time slot. Well, Ted Gunnison knew very well. They simply, you know, went to Reader's Digest and had a special, you know, thing printed and stuck into the archives. And let's pretend this was the original Reader's Digest from, I think it was May of 1992 or 93, whatever the year was. And Ted Gunnison, to his credit, working with another lady in L.A., started digging through the newspaper archives. And they found two of them, the L.A. Times, and I think it was the Philadelphia Inquirer. In the newspaper on that date, on the Discovery Channel, there it was. The Conspiracy of Silence, the exact time and date that Reader's Digest originally listed it at. And they says, no, no, this is blah, blah, blah. So what I'm saying here, it's business as usual for these guys to, particularly if they're going to do it electronically, just backtrack and claim they produced this. And what's it for, you know, how difficult it is for them to pick up, to print up 20 editions of a bogus, you know, whatever the year was that he was born, 1961. They can print up bogus print editions of that and stick that in their archives. You know, every newspaper has what they call a morgue in which they, you know, they have newspapers today, obviously, on electronic or computer files.
Yeah, they would put it on microfiche.
Right,
yeah.
They would put it on microfiche, but even beyond that, many newspapers, I don't know if they do it today, but, you know, when I was younger, because I used to work in a newspaper when I was younger during the summer when I went to school, they had these places where they kept, you know, at least one copy, you know, hard copy of the newspaper for every day that it was printed. They called it the morgue. It's a huge warehouse. And so I don't know if all newspapers continue that tradition today, but they did it at a time because they wanted to have a, you know, a genuine archival copy of the newspaper that was printed on that particular day. So what's it to these people to just fudge an archival copy and insert it and take out the original and destroy it? It's
yeah.
Probably done all the time.
Well, I want to come back to this original story for a moment, but let me comment on what you just said. In all of my research, and I think you're catching on to this due to some things that I've shared with you where our research may be following a parallel path, but we're using separate methods for coming up with the data we're finding. I'm sure you will agree, and probably many of my listeners who are familiar with this topic now, that if you start investigating real estate transactions, you see corruption. If you start looking at databases in people searches, you start seeing corruption. And we can tie it to real estate. We can tie it to likely drug dealing. We can tie it to mind control. We can tie it to intelligence agencies. We can tie it to foreign corporations masquerading or stealing the identities of individuals and converting this data into something related to real estate or any of those other things. We know that the court system is using this on a local all the way through a federal level. They're using these public databases in the same manner. So is it unusual to expect the media, the propagandized media, to be altering documents or creating fictitious documents, changing dates, backdating, making corrections, and deleting huge portions of text? Now, that's basically what's described in this article that was posted at Rents.com, where he goes into the specific rerouting of the address, the original web address. And there's a very interesting point that comes up here, and I don't even think Jeff Rentz understood the significance of this when he wrote this down. He mentions Akamai. He says Akamai is a company that caches copies of websites or specific files on servers. This is to alleviate the bandwidth needs of the master server. The mirror data is served from servers which are closer to you, in other words, fewer network hops, and from places which may have more available speed. Depending on the content and configuration of the web server and your location, you may get a different IP address and host name for the www site. Now, this is part of what they sell in terms of what Akamai technology is. Akamai is part of my paper trail to 9/11. I can tie it to MIT. I can tie it to an alleged victim of Flight 11 that supposedly crashed into the first tower at the World Trade Center. Daniel C. Lewin, as he's listed in the newspapers, is Daniel M. Lewin, a member of Sayeret Matkal, graduate of Technion in Haifa, Israel, and also a scientist working on algorithms at IBM Haifa. And when I discovered that information and shared that with some IBM or ex-IBM employees, they told me there wasn't even an IBM facility in Israel. And to their surprise, they found out that I was right about it. Lewin's parents, with the last name Levine, coincidentally, I found out after I had tracked Lewin to Houston, Texas, and Lewin is involved with a company called Homeland Security Investments in Washington, D.C. He's got two addresses in Washington, D.C., and one in Houston, and is working as a webmaster. How is that possible when he supposedly died on 9/11? Well, one of the keys to this whole thing is the billions of dollars he would have made on the price of Akamai stock on 9/11. It was up somewhere, as I recall, near $327.60 a share. He owned some 10.75 million shares of that stock with F. Tom Leighton, the math professor at MIT, who was the co-founder of Akamai with Lewin. And the stocks were transferred in the billions of dollars, a third to his alleged widow, Anne, and who suddenly in 2004 became an American citizen. How the clock speeds up when they want to get somebody into this country. Mm. and then a third, and we're talking about billions of dollars. A third went to a Susan Silberberg, who is an architectural professor at MIT, also does international urban design. So you can see the Illuminati connections. You can see the connections to the Pentagon, obviously, through MIT, and they're using Akamai technologies merely to intercept all transmissions on the Internet. Mm-hmm. Under the guise of relieving certain servers of the stress and the pressure of all the data they have to handle. Mm. So when you consider that, Jeff mentioned that, I doubt that he even knew the significance of it, but it is pertinent to mention that because that is very accurate what he said in that article. Wow. So we had hanky-panky going on with the Honolulu advertiser, and it makes you wonder, first of all, the alleged reference to, you know, the birth announcement that they put in the paper. It's a fudged document. There's no doubt about it. The lines aren't straight. The lines don't connect. They did a very sloppy, amateurish job of inserting text. And they tried to make it look like they blew the text up, to emphasize it. Well, that's not how you reproduce documents and to make them look official. It's just more of the same misleading corruption. So I wanted to make that point. Aside from the fact that everything that supposedly came before this is bogus, and but they had to make this correction. Well, this writer didn't seem to have a problem with it. In fact, he was obviously not even knowledgeable about the Constitution, that he would irresponsibly report such a comment. But you see, it wasn't his research. It was just a statement made by person being interviewed.
Right.
Isn't it interesting how the truth comes out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in that case, that woman, you know, not being a, you know, not being raised in America and, was simply unaware of the, requirement to be, you know, a natural born citizen, at least to be the president. Well, of course, at the time, he wasn't even running for president. So as far as she knew, he was just, you know, a U.S. senator, which you can be. You can be a naturalized citizen and be in the Senate or a governor like Arnold Schwarzenegger, for instance.
Yeah, I got a chat message.
I'm not particularly in favor of that, but that's at least the law.
Mm-hmm.
To be the president, you're required to be born on U.S. soil.
Mm-hmm.
And, I believe that the number of Americans, people who are cognizant of the fact that he's not U.S. born is definitely growing. I of course, you know, the media is complicit in crime, all the people who had the official responsibility to check his credentials are equally guilty of, you know, committing crimes against the people of this country, because the Nancy Pelosi and the head of the Democratic, all the people who's, or even when he was, you know, going for his state seat, there are I don't know whether it's the Secretary of State who bears the responsibility to verify the legitimacy of candidates who are in the state legislature, but whoever that office is, they've obviously didn't fulfill their job or didn't do what was, you know, required of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who should, you know, be swinging from, you know, a lamppost, you know, figuratively speaking. There's a great deal of crime that has occurred among many who acted in, you know, collusion and or negligence to make it possible for him to get where, you know, to, you know, fraudulently occupy the presidency of this country. But I try to do my little part every time I refer to him. I occasionally refer to him as Obama, but almost never President Obama. I usually refer to him as the imposter, or lately I've adopted the Indonesia imposter to make it a little bit more clear.
Well, we could say the New Guinea long-legged Mac Daddy.
We can do that too. We could even come up with acronyms. I mean, we could have lots of fun with this. But yeah, I intentionally make it a point of referring to him as the imposter every time I write something that requires his name, because I want to at least remind my readers that this guy is a fraud. He's criminally occupying the White House.
Yeah, I'm getting a chat message here from some of our listeners. They're pointing out that basically, wherever there is a major military presence, they'll have newspapers from all of the. And we're speaking about the daily papers from around the country for the past 100 years, from all 50 states.
Oh.
And the outlying territories as well. And even two of our broadcasting affiliates overseas are saying the same thing in all the major cities around the world.
So they're corroborating the notion of a hard print copy is still kept,
mm-hmm,
of newspapers,
yeah,
for the last 100 years, you're saying.
Yeah. In fact, the Reader's Digest story that you referenced, I think it was a couple of years ago, I saw a copy of that original. Mm-hmm. Somebody had it posted on the web.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
So, and, yeah. And Ted mentioned that also on my show.
Okay.
Maybe a year and a half ago, something
yeah.
like that.
You know, here's another possibility for people in Hawaii. There are some people who collect newspapers. And since 2006 was only 3 years ago, it's possible some industrious person who does collect newspapers for whatever reason and collects that particular newspaper would have that particular issue on that date and would have the original statements there before they did the retractions or whatever they wanted to call it. So that's another way, and even since we're talking about Reader's Digest, some people collect, you know, every issue of Playboy that ever came out, and some people collect every issue of Reader's Digest. So that is another source, that even if the official archival sources might have been compromised, there's always a possibility that some collector out there will have an original edition, and you can establish the truthfulness of the story in that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Honolulu Advertiser is one of the papers that I wrote about when writing about the money families of Hawaii in my Three Stooges Go to Washington series,
right.
and pointing out the banking and power money ties that Madeline Dunham, and we'll use that name with reservation. Maybe
yeah.
we should call her Magdalena Maduna, as she was listed in 1950 on mm-hmm. that shipping passenger record.
Mm-hmm.
it's amazing. You see, the dots are being connected. It's fascinating. And all we really have to do is sit back and watch now, because there are enough people that have read my series, and it's been posted on enough websites that, people can do this research themselves. That's really what I was hoping for anyway.
Yeah.
I can't do it all myself. Neither can you. We rely a lot on what we hear from listeners and readers alike. There are people waking up. We say this every time you're on the show. You can see more and more people are waking up.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And more and more people are discovering there is something available to us now that, you know, we didn't have just, you know, 10 years or so ago, perhaps 12 years ago. It's these fabulous search engines. This is remarkable. A large percentage of people around the world, wealthy or poor, have a computer in their house, and they have internet access. And with that, you go to these search engines. I don't go directly to Google because they have these programs in place that can track what you're searching and where you're going. So to avoid that, I use a program called Scroogle.org that kind of strips away your identifying info, but you can still obtain from Google search engines the same information. So whenever I do a search, I go to Scroogle.org, and then I enter the information I want to search for, and it gives me virtually the same results you would get with Google, but without identifying me and creating a record, which of course winds up in God knows how many government data banks, not only in this country, but in other countries, you know, Israel, China, Russia, you name it. These data links, let's say, or tracking networks are all around the world. And so that to try to at least minimize that exposure, I use Scroogle. But it's a wonderful research tool. It used to be in earlier times to dig deep in an esoteric subject. you had to physically go to a big library, the New York Library or the, you know, the Congressional Library in Washington, and, you know, physically go there and spend all day there and dig. And even then you could get at some archives and maybe you couldn't get at others depending on who you were. Or you can go to a, you know, presidential library, and if you're some well-received mucky muck who's going to write a, you know, a glowing piece about whoever's library that is, Nixon's or whatever, you'll maybe get access to certain documents that the average guy won't get to see. But today, from your computer, you can find out an amazing array of information by using these Google search engines or other similar search engines. So it's just a matter of getting used to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You enter the things you want to look for and use a comma or a plus sign between the various keywords and hit the search button. It's amazing what comes up. And then from those links, you start clicking them off. Sometimes you have to dig 2, 3, 4, 5 pages deep to find the link that you were looking for. But more often than not, you sort of get what you want on the first page or two.
Mm-hmm. Not to interrupt, you can. I'm getting a flurry of emails and chat messages from people around the world saying that in some locales the stream dropped off the air. In others, it's looping. Seth says we're okay now. So anyone out there that's experiencing any difficulty, it's not our fault. That's what happens when the truth comes out. it's par for the course.
Okay. Well, I
we're okay though. We're still on the air and we're still okay. Recording, so we'll have a complete archive.
Okay.
it's amazing.
It's because I'm keeping you know, my all my programs shut off. I'm just
you're not looping and I'm not looping. We've got a solid signal. It's
okay.
It's what happens when you say some things that they don't like. They have to try to interfere. They're like
right.
Little children.
Right, but the archive will be okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's you know, aspect of what we just discussed. I sort of wanted to spend a little time to just touch on the swine flu story a bit. I know we've done a number of stories on it, and you have probably done the majority of your shows, except perhaps with Jim Murray on Friday, touching on the swine flu in most of the cases. And so I realize it's been well discussed, but because of the ongoing nature of the vaccination propaganda, I just want to add a little bit to this.
Mm-hmm.
Until they stop this urging of people to get vaccinations, until we get through probably November and December, maybe even January, I don't know how long the media, the CDC, the World Health Organization, the AMA, all the official, quote, health promoters, which is an oxymoron, until they just completely back off on this whole, oh, you got to get your swine flu, and certainly those states that have actually gone so far as to pass fascist legislation, which would mandate people to get a vaccine. I'm talking about Massachusetts, Maine, and I believe there have been some other states that have come on board since. For a time there in the state of New York, they were telling, quote, healthcare workers that they had to get a swine flu vaccine by a certain date. It was late October, I believe, maybe early November, I'm not sure. And if they didn't get their swine flu shot by that date, well, whatever job they had with a hospital, with a clinic, whatever sort of work they did in that field, they would be terminated. because of their refusal. And thankfully, because of the willingness of particularly nurses in New York and others, particularly Gary Null, I might say, really jumped in with both feet on this story. Of course, Gary's office is in New York City, so it would make sense that he, being a one of the country's better known proponents for natural living, as we say it, or nature-based medicine, he's very much opposed to vaccinations and has been producing a lot of articles, documentaries, and hundreds of, thousands of radio shows. He does a radio show usually every day of the week, Monday through Friday at least. And he's been on the forefront of debunking the myths, the lies, the superstitions, which are manufactured by the pharmaceutical industry and all, quote, orthodox health groups who toe the line for the pharmaceutical industry. And this is all your, certainly your federal, National Institute of Health, FDA, the CDC, all those federal groups, but also state health boards, et cetera. They're all in tow with the official line from the pharmaceutical people, and that is that they want you to believe vaccines are safe. They want you to think they've been tested. And just recently, for 3 or 4 days ago, I took an article off Jeff Rentz's site, in which it was a website called WebMD. They had a long article there, written by a man named Doug DeNoon, I think. And the article was overseen by a medical doctor, a woman. I think the name was Chen, something like that. I'd have to check. But anyway, I read it, and the title of the article, flu vaccines, are they safe and effective? Something close to that. And in the beginning of this article, the writer allows maybe three different, let's say, sops to the anti-vaccine people that, it's true, not every single vaccination case is free of any complications. There are, extremely rare, and what they'll use again and again and again. I see this on television. I see it in print all the time. Constantly will echo this mantra. As for instance, in the case of this 26-year-old young cheerleader, Desiree Jennings from Virginia, who was really neurologically damaged big time because of taking that swine flu. In her case and in all other cases, they will say this over and over. This is a one in a million rarity. I can't tell you how many times I've heard it on these clips of CNN, et cetera, Fox. NBC particularly is notorious for spouting this line that this sort of situation that happened with that girl is one in a million. That is utter poppycock. The numbers of damage from people, serious damage from vaccination, any vaccination, you get neurological damage. That's far, far greater than one in a million. But the swine flu vaccine is especially dangerous and damaging. Now, to give one example of how they are skewing these statistics enormously. We've talked about it. You've talked about it with Drew Raines on the show, the story of the Navy ship back in April, May of this year at left San Diego, Thailand.
And actually, we talked about it more recently, but you're referring to the dates that occurred.
Right. Well, yeah. I just want to talk about the overall case.
Yeah.
Is that 347 personnel aboard that ship were vaccinated. And approximately 14 days after their vaccination, the overwhelming majority of people who were vaccinated developed flu symptoms. And of those, the large majority of them developed very serious flu symptoms, so serious that it was life-threatening. And beyond that, two of the 347 people perished. They died. Now, if you simply use that as a base of statistics, out of 347 inoculated with this poison, two died. So when you come to like one in a million statistics, that would work out to about 6,000 people in a million would die as a result, if we're going to use the Navy ship as an example. But when you consider how many people got serious life-threatening symptoms, it's a very large number. Now, Drew Raines originally told me two-thirds of the ship became very seriously ill. But you told me a few days ago on the phone that the number was even higher than that. Do you recall?
Yeah, yeah. The original report was that there were, I don't have the exact number of sailors on these ships, and there were five ships we found out. At first, we were getting reports of two. There were wives of some of these sailors calling in to the show to share this information, and then, you know, the powers that be leaned on them about disclosing the information. And, of course, you don't want to disclose where the ships are in general, but the point was not to be concerned about national security. These guys were very sick from these vaccinations. And they had, on one ship, there were 347 people. I think 333 of them came down with very severe symptoms.
Okay.
Few people had died, and they had sent a group of doctors and assistants. I don't know if they were all doctors, but there was a group of 50, and two of those people got sick and died, is what I had heard.
Right.
So, you know, the information coming out was very splotchy and very sporadic, but we were able to identify the ships, the types of ships that they were, and Bob Chapman had actually reported this incident in his following issue of the International Forecaster. That, I believe, that was in September.
Right, right. 'Cause that's the show that I first heard of it. I heard Drew Raines' show. He was interviewing Bob. It was in September, probably the latter part of September. And that's when I got the story. Anyway, that is an example of what the, you know, closer to what you can extrapolate as the true statistics. Now,
so what they're saying then is that that each one of those sailors represented a million people. So you're talking about 333 million sailors.
It's one way, you know, of extrapolating it's the way to extrapolate a statistical model using that incidence to draw an analogy from.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of one in a million people, they'll say over and over again, may come down, and this is the only thing they mention, Guillain-Barre. Well, Guillain-Barre is a serious complication of vaccines, but it's fairly common. A lot of people come down with Guillain-Barre. What they don't mention, what they should have mentioned, is a certain percentage of people die, you know, within hours, within days, or within a week and a half or 2 weeks of getting this vaccine. They don't even bring that up. So, in reviewing this PR piece, this public relations piece that I saw published on WebMD website, completely opposite of the truth. They were claiming to dispel, quote, the myths and hypes hype that you find out there on the internet, meaning, you know, websites like mine that make these wild, unfounded accusations. And here is this man who produced this article, not one reference. Gary Noe and a man named Richard Gale just produced a very lengthy paper, prints out to about 100 pages. They published it on September 28th in anticipation of going to the Albany Capitol building to present the case to legislatures there the next day on September 29th.
Which they did.
Did they?
Yes.
And I got the paper off Gary Noe's site. He had it in PDF format. I reorganized it into HTML, which allows you to get more text on a given page, and it's a little bit easier to read, I believe, because you can, you know, it's wider. You can scan it left to right. These sentences are longer, and I personally find HTML documents much easier to read, and it takes up less paper. When you print out a PDF document, you're using about double the paper that you would use in HTML. So for many reasons, because it's easier to post, some people don't have Adobe and they can't read a PDF con, etc. So I made it available on my site as HTML. And of course, in fixing the page and highlighting it in italics and bolds and all that, I had to read every word of it. Very well done. At the end of it, though, peppered throughout the very well-written scientific report by Gary Noe and Richard Gale called Flu Vaccines, you know, How Are They Safe and Effective? That was the title of the paper. And, of course, peppered throughout was 200 references. There are references to peer-reviewed journals. These are the very journals that the medical orthodoxy stands on. This is what they call science. This is JAMA, you know, the Journal of American Medical Association. This is the New England Journal. You know, these are the Lancet, et cetera. These are their babies. And Noe and Gale made a point of just using their data. And I might say Vera Scheidner, back in the early 90s, did a terrific job in putting together a very damning case against vaccinations. And she put a wonderful book together, I think it was around 95 or so. And I heard her do a splendid presentation at Granada Forum around 96, 97, summer. I have that tape. And just recently, Gary Noe has been doing blockbuster DVDs about vaccines, and his latest one includes an interview with Dr. Vera Scheidner of Australia. This woman is magnificent because she's, you know, been sounding the horn for a few decades now on the dangers of vaccinations. Anyway, she too, in her book and all her papers, she does not use anecdotes. She does not use patient, testimony. She only uses orthodoxy peer-reviewed journals to make her case. So when you realize that when you confront any orthodox person with this is their own material. This is the one that they say is good science. And the evidence is so overwhelming that vaccines are an unmitigated disaster. Anyone in their right mind who spends the time to read, you know, vaccination exposés books. There's plenty of them in print. But the latest stuff that Gary Noe's putting out is you can get it off the internet free. You can get it from my website. I haven't put them all up there, but I've started a special page of just Gary Noe's papers, video clips, etc. It's kind of a one source repository for Gary Noe's material, so you don't have to hunt all over the internet to find it. But he's just doing a terrific job. And what he said when he went before these New York legislators, both on September 29 and again October 13. His website people just put that video up just a few days ago. I'll be reproducing it on my website. He really let these people know on these committee panels that the parade of doctors from this orthodox this health group, this doctor so and so in charge of this hospital, all these guys that are being paraded as experts, they're spinning yarns. What they're saying about vaccination, its safety, its efficacy, etc., are simply superstition. There is no science behind what they're saying.
You know, I have a copy of Horrors of Vaccination on my website as a PDF document, and I was recently given a copy of the republished book, Horrors of Vaccination, by Charles M. Higgins, published in 1920, sounding the alarm, and there are pictures in this book, and you have to see these pictures to see how horrible. I mean, it's an appropriate title for a book about vaccinations. There's no doubt about it. But moments or hours before some of these victims died of their injuries, they gave permission to have photographs taken, and you should see the eruptions and the lesions all over their bodies.
Yes.
It's horrific. It really is. So
yes.
It's a very appropriate.
That's very important. Yes. I know Truot played a big role in obtaining that book and perhaps making the PDFs available, etc. So he deserves full credit for helping to get that one up there. Thank you for reminding me. I will grab that myself and or steer people to your site so they can download it. But yeah, we've all been raised in this country and inculcated under the influence of organized medicine. When I say that, I'm talking about pharmaceutical-based medicine or allopathic medicine. Now, of course, when I was younger, I didn't know that there was a difference in doctors. We just call them Dr. So-and-so, our family doctor or specialist in this. Because when there's only allopathic physicians around, well, they don't put allopathic physician on the door. It just says Dr. So-and-so on the door, okay? So it wasn't until I was, maybe in my 20s, the late 20s, early 30s, that I even found out about chiropractics. That was a new subject to me. Why? Because my father got tremendous relief from a chiropractor after years of getting stonewalled and the runaround and zero results from conventional doctors. But, I mean, they sure got his money for 10 or 15 years in which they did nothing for him. He was in a tremendous amount of pain. He broke his back during World War II. And finally, my father found this chiropractic. And it took about a year of treatment, but he made him completely pain-free after having been in just horrendous pain for about, 20 years or so. And my dad thought this guy walked on water, because he had spent so much time with so many conventional physicians who are mechanics. I keep on reminding people every time we get to the topic of orthodox medicine, these guys are mechanics. They're mechanics in the same way that, Joe Piccolo down at the garage there is a mechanic when he, changes your clutch or replaces your fuel injector or something. Mechanics think and act mechanically. And the allopathy and what they teach in medical school, particularly since the Flexner Report, 1910 or so, is that the mechanical method is the best method. So, and of course the reality is it's not. It does have its place in emergency medicine a car accident, heart attack, you know, a lot of blood spurting, gunshot wounds, etc. That's where mechanical, you know, emergency, particularly surgery, does its best. But when it comes to managing, or I should say curing, which is the word we should be using, disease conditions, and especially chronic disease conditions, or even acute infective disease conditions, the mechanical way and the pharmaceutical way is not the best way.
Mm-hmm.
It is the least effective way to resolve the problem. Nature-based therapies are the best way to resolve mm-hmm. the problem.
I got a message here from one of our listeners in real time, which is both in the form of a question and a comment, if I can share that with you. He says, might we also correctly assume that the population on the Navy ships were in good and, generally speaking, better health than the civilian population? So the statistic might even be supportive of an assumption that there would be a greater negative effect on civilians.
So, yes, I understand. That's a valid point. But yes, of course, young people at that age range, you know, in the Navy, they're typically late teens, early 20s type age range. Sure, you're at the top of your physical curve.
In essence, what he's saying is even that one in a million figure should drop down even lower on the ships. Yet out of the number that were inoculated, a very high percentage had a very adverse reaction.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the point I'm, of course, getting to is that number that they're using is utterly made up. It's a fantasy number. There is no reality
mm-hmm.
there.
And we don't want to confuse this also with Larry Graham's song "One in a Million."
Oh yeah, that was a very nice tune. Yeah, and this is what Gary Null, God bless him, God bless his heart, was hammering home when he was sitting at these hearings, you know, which he has the, you know, the ability and money and time and personnel who film him doing this or videotape him, and then it winds up on YouTube. That's where it belongs, because that way we can see what he had to say to these people. And he really hammered it home that what we're hearing are myths, lies, and superstition from people who have no conscience. That's the word he used. It's
mm-hmm.
true. He says these people are criminals. And then, you know, you can see his anger is rising. It should be rising. Because
mm-hmm.
the reason I'm, you know, devoting, you know, the last part of this show again, once again, to the swine flu is that everyone who believes the mainstream propaganda story that, oh, it's so rare, it's one in a million, oh, poor Desiree Jennings, but folks, it's just one in a million, so your chances are next to nothing when you consider how saving and wonderful the swine flu vaccine is compared to the dangers of dying from swine flu. Just get your damn vaccine, folks. You know, that's what we're getting from the media. And, of course, everyone who buys it, like Desiree, she bought it. I read that she got extra points. She has, what was it, maybe some sort of insurance group she has, that if she gets the swine flu, she's supposedly better protected and healthier, and therefore she gets certain points, some sort of advantage in this insurance scheme that you, that company or that whatever she was looking to get points with. That's why she went to get it, because she, you know, you can see in leading a story, she's a very, let's say, aggressive individual who wants to get ahead in life. She wants to be a cheerleader. She wants to be a CEO of, I mean, this, she wants to be a marathon runner. You know, she's at that stage in her life when she wants to take a big bite out of the American pie. That's fine. But, she did what a lot of people who are believing and trusting and naive do. They believe these unending stream of lies that come out of TV, that come out of official organizations who supposed to have our welfare at heart, and they don't. Mm-hmm. They're in bed with the Rockefeller Empire, and the Rockefeller Empire is in the business of eugenics.
I wanted to underscore something, if I could, and before we go off on that tangent, and you're welcome to, you know, I don't want to, I'm not pulling the reins in here other than to interject something. You and I are actually working on something sort of as a collaboration, and we'll go into more detail at a later time. But I can say that one of the shills for the pharmaceutical companies who's beating the drum of get the vaccine, it's important, there's a pandemic, you know, I've come to the rescue to sound the alarm, get the vaccine, over and over, on countless radio shows and in a number of articles, this individual is mentioned. And we've discovered some very interesting global connections. Yes. Connections to the same universities that keep appearing in all of this research, Harvard, Columbia, Stanford. Now, these are very highbrow and expensive institutes of higher education, but they're also part of the Good Old Boys Club. Yale is another one. And there are associations to people who, let's say, are have affiliations with international groups, such as the Asia Society, or a Council on Foreign Relations, and on and on and on. And it's going to be very revealing to people, because it's quite obvious that these people are shills for the Illuminati. There's no right. doubt about it.
Right.
And we must recognize the source of the information. The information, we can tell, is bogus, but the source and who's behind it, and again, it points to Rockefeller at every stage.
Right.
If I name a bunch of Rockefeller-owned publications, is there any doubt that someone that writes for those publications is working for Rockefellers? There's no doubt about it. The Nation, The Globalist, mm-hmm. the Yale Center for the Study of Globalization.
Yeah.
These, you know, I mean, it's there. It's there. And these people get these awards. They're lauded. Well, you know, UC Berkeley, you know, it jumps up at every stage of my research on Obama and the Bank of Hawaii. Berkeley comes up. Madeline Dunham, Berkeley comes up. Of course, this wasn't known to the general public. This is where the trail led, you see. We see this again and again. So I think, you know, we're just letting the audience know that you and I are working on something that's going to be very revealing and flat out going to show who's working for whom here. Because These stooges have a financial interest in this as well.
Oh yes, a very big financial interest, and you know, the cooperation is deeper than that. In most cases, when you get below the surface story, you see there are let's say more hidden connections with organizations, with groups that, well, when you find out what's really going on behind the scene, it can get pretty dark. And
to mention eugenics. It doesn't get any darker than that.
But. Well, but it's you know, starting with you know, right with Sibelius, Kathleen Sibelius. That, you know, Margaret Chan of the World Health Organization. These people are in, let's say, a special club. And that club they don't talk about when they put out their lies and their propaganda and their misdirections and their assurances of safety. These people are part of the Illuminati, and the Illuminati has an agenda of genocide in place, in this swine flu vaccination operation is the most serious and lethal attempt to poison the bulk of the world's population. I mentioned it in the article that I put up on October 5, but I'll just repeat it here, that we've been subjected to 11 years of poisoning via chemtrails, but thankfully many forces have come together to help neutralize and greatly diminish and roll back the damage that was being effected by chemtrails. And it seems that with every passing year, those forces were gaining more and more momentum. One example being General Jeremiah's announcement on July 28th with you and I, that their group had engaged in a neutralization program that was being effected worldwide to detoxify chemtrails. So we see that there's been a, you know, just a huge improvement in the chemtrail situation. So it appears that whatever poisoning plans they had presumed through their computer projections and models and so forth weren't going to pan out with chemtrails. So now they've decided this year to try this all-out push for this contrived, false, completely hoaxed swine flu scenario, and then to actually try to force people around the world to get a bioweaponized vaccine, which is really a poison, in order to combat a non-existent, quote, pandemic. And this is as serious as it gets. And everyone who gets this vaccine, they have damaged themselves. And
yeah.
What I'm hoping that people like Elder Hale and others, homeopathy particularly, can be very effective in neutralizing the damage from vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that in the months and in years to come, that we can improve in obtaining neutralization techniques and therapies that will try to undo this damage. But the way you would avoid the damage is you don't get the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, I've said it in time. I heard your guest last night say it. I've heard Michael Anthony say it. I've heard everyone say it, but I'll repeat it as well. Don't get the vaccine no matter what. No matter what they threaten you with, they say they're going to put you in jail. They're going to put you in a FEMA camp. You're going to lose your job. Whatever they threaten you with, suck it up. Don't get the vaccine.
You know, Ken, when I listen to this argument that the government and their agency shills for the pharmaceutical companies, like the FDA and the CDC, put out all of these lies and this unsubstantiated documentation that these are safe and they've gone out of their way prior to doing all this to exonerate themselves from any liability.
Absolutely.
For anything negative, any negative consequences. And they know damn well what they've created, which is why they went and did this. You see, they're all trying to protect themselves. How? Legally. You see, this is all legalism, and it has nothing to do with the Constitution. It has nothing to do with the truth. It's organized crime. It's like in the days of Prohibition, it's like Al Capone going around house to house saying, you've got to take baths in my gin, or else we're going to gun you down when you come out of your house or your apartment.
Right.
Okay, it's no different from the gangsters saying something like that. Okay,
exactly. You got it.
And you're going to have people saying, well, we don't drink alcohol, or alcohol is illegal. It doesn't matter. You see, they're just playing God, And it's very sadistic. It's spiritual warfare, and it's not even human. Mm-hmm. On the end, that the end that's the puppet master pulling the strings, they're not even human. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality. That needs to be said here, because people are cowering in fear of losing their job, fear of having to pay penalties. That's all they do, is burden people with expenses, mm-hmm. and taxes and license fees and costs for this and permits and this and that, and it never ends. And it's coming to a point where people have to say, you know, enough is enough now. The game is over. Mm-hmm. We're finished playing your game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it does take. And you know, the average person who hears these things, knows they're true, they are true, has to get into the game. I mentioned this. Now, this doesn't mean you do what's within your capacity. But you just can't cower silently at home and hope they don't, you know, bang down your door to vaccinate you when your time comes. It just takes a very small number of active people to effectively put a chokehold on these politicians. A, they're cowards. I've got to remind listeners of that. We are not talking about people of character here. We are talking about, as Gary Null correctly said, criminals. Criminals who are have sold their soul. I mean, they have no moral base. They have no moral compass. They're just doing that which is gaining them wealth, power, position, connections, etc. It's all for self-gain. But they will hold on to it as long as they can perpetuate their hegemony over others without suffering a backlash. Mm-hmm. As long as they can do it in comfort and safety, they'll continue to lord it over you. So what you do is what the nurse group did. 1,200 or so went up to Albany on September 29th, and they let those clowns know. And I was happy to hear Gary Null from the podium refer to them as clowns. That's exactly what they are. These people need to feel the righteous anger of the public. And they need to feel it every single day when they're going out of their home to drive off to the Capitol building. There ought to be a group of 100, 200 people out there jeering them. And when they arrive and then they leave the office, there ought to be another 100 people jeering them. There ought to be a letter writing campaign going on every day so that, you know, your various people are, you know, 100, 200, 1,000 people are assigned a letter writing. Not one letter. They handwrite perhaps 20 or 30 letters.
Yeah, you know, Ken, I want to comment on something here. We often say this is spiritual warfare. This is literally good against evil, or good versus evil. The system that has been created on this planet has been tweaked and tweaked and tweaked to the point to where they have determined that they're going to play God. They're going to be God, but they cannot be God, the God of the creation. The one and only God, so they have to be the opposite. They have to be the dichotomy of God. And so they have invested all of their efforts, their mind control, their propaganda, their corrupted organized religion, their corrupt financial system. Everything that they have controlled has taken God out of the picture. They've made it a crime to speak to God in schools, to pray to God, to use God's name. Yet the farce is that when you go into the courts and they ask you to swear on a Bible, so help you God, but they order any reference to God taken out of the courtrooms. Does this not register in our minds? Are we really all that brainwashed? You know, I'm asking that rhetorically, of course. Yeah. We're not. We recognize what they're doing. But this is the point that I'm you know, sending out to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that they have focused their efforts on taking God out of the picture, and they're trying to represent the New Guinea long-legged Mac Daddy as the Messiah. I mean, do you not see the farce in all of this? And this individual has been described by Pastor James David Manning, by many, many talk show hosts and many knowledgeable guests, students of history and students of politics and archaeology and anthropology and know the history of the world and know the history of the secret societies, and they say that this is the most corrupt individual that they've ever seen. That may be debatable, because I think George H.W. Bush, a.k.a. Scherf, is likely, you know, the winner of that one. But he didn't get himself a Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, look at the corruption that goes on there, that they give this guy, they nominate him for a Peace Prize 11 days after he began the presidency, but now we've learned that that was determined in December of 2008 that he was going to win that prize. You know, it's a farce. It's absolute farce. And to give these people honorary degrees, what is that? What does that mean? It's a GD piece of paper, to use George W. Bush's words. That's all it is. It means nothing. Even his bogus birth certificate. He can't even produce a driver's license. And these people are making laws telling us what we must do. How can you, I'm talking a listening audience, how can you allow anyone to do that to you? How can you say that you know God, that you have faith in God, that you're in pursuit of arriving at heaven after your life is over, and you're going to be accountable for what you've done in your life, and you allow this to occur? You know, it's an issue of us having a choice, and they have in every way possible tried to remove the conscious choice of choosing the side of good, the side of God. And people are going to have to be accountable for it. If you read some of the writings of what God says He's going to do to those that choose that other side, it's amazing. So, Ken, we're about out of time here. Would you like to make a closing remark before we say goodnight to our listeners?
Okay, well, I'll just say that my articles about swine flu, and anyone who's, you know, hearing the show tonight, the most helpful thing you can do is to, in any way you can, to warn people of the dangers of taking the swine flu vaccine, and obviously don't take it yourself, but tell other people it's dangerous, and that the medical orthodoxy, and anyone who you see on a, you know, on mainstream television screen, etc., they're simply mouthing scripted lies that they're told is here, say this, that's what they're saying. There's no truth to it. This vaccination, this one in particular, is dangerous and damaging to the body. It won't protect you from anything, but it'll certainly give you a bunch of problems that could even cost you your life, or you can wind up severely damaged, like Desiree Jennings. So anyway, all my articles are on my current news page. If they just scroll down the latest articles, I have a special dedicated page for all the swine flu articles, and particularly the articles and the videos, etc., by Gary Null will be found in that section. And if you really want scientific ammunition to disprove to anyone who has bought the orthodox story that the vaccines are safe and one in a million rarities of a bad reaction, blah, 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 just download, read, and give people Gary Knoll's papers. Very well done. The scientific evidence is there.
Yes. And I'd say stop listening to mainstream media. Unplug the television. They're lying about this. It doesn't matter. They're making it basically a contest between the various corrupt anchors of these shows.
Mm.
In particular, Glenn Beck appeared on Bill O'Reilly's show, and O'Reilly says he's taking the vaccine. Several commentators on in the alternative media have speculated that that probably earned him millions of dollars just to make that statement. Somebody tempted him to say that, and Glenn Beck wouldn't say whether or not he or his children were going to take the vaccine. Obama himself said his children aren't going to. Well, I really don't even care about him. I don't care one way or the other. What we need is a vaccine against politicians, corrupt bankers, and the military-industrial complex. We need a vaccine to prevent that. That would be the one.
That would be the only one we might be interested in promoting, huh?
Yeah. Well, Ken, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the show. A lot of interesting information. I did read Gary Knoll's articles that you had posted. They're very well written, just chock full of information. That's where you go if you want to understand what is going on. He's speaking the truth. H. Watt has been doing the same thing. Dr. Bill Deagle, it's Alexander S. Jones, Dr. Arthur Evangelista, and some others have been putting the truth out there. And the truth is when you hear, don't take the vaccine. That's when you know you're hearing the truth.
Right, right, right. Thanks, Don.
Okay, Ken, you have a good night, and we'll be talking soon. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our guest, Ken Adachi. Visit his website at educate-yourself.org. You can spend the rest of your life there and not read everything he's got posted, unless you're a speed reader. Special thanks to Evelyn Wood Reading Course on that one. would like to thank all the folks who are listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, as well as blogtalkradio.com. And special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick for the sound, and everything else he's been doing tonight. He's been sort of juggling between emails, phone calls, and chat messages. Also, to you, the listening audience, thank you for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my Friday night guest will be, again, scientist, inventor, Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone out there a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.